All right. Let's get fired up here.
Maximum freedom. Read.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom.
Stay on target.
Maximum freedom. Read Rothbard.
Hello and welcome to the Actual Anarchy Podcast. This is the podcast where we talk about movies from a Rothbardian anarcho-capitalist perspective. And tonight, we're going to do RoboCop. This is episode 201 of the show. You can find the show notes more at actualanarchy.com/201. Now, Robert and I, we did a thing where we recorded a couple of episodes all in the same week. And that ended with Godfather Part 2, our most recent episode with the great Keith Knight. And you can find that at actualanarchy.com/200. So we are going to kick off a little bit of rust and a little bit of dust and maybe bring up some current events that have happened in the past couple of weeks that we missed because of our little mini break hiatus that we've had here. But let's check in with Robert, see how things are going. What's new with you down on the sidelines there, bud?
Oh, shit. I'm supposed to have an answer for this question? What's new? I don't know. I bounced around on a trampoline. Is that interesting content for you? That's all that I can think of. There's like a debate that happened yesterday.
Right. And we talked about that pretty extensively in the pre-show bonus content, which I'd buy that for a dollar. Hit us up at Patreon and you can watch that near hour of pre-show bonus content, half of which is with our buddy, our guest, Mike C, who will be joining us in a moment on the last night's portion of the show. But we did do a brief debate analysis, me from secondhand sources and you from actual watching it, viewing it with your eyeballs. And you still have eyeballs that didn't sear out of your head. So you survived it. But the gist of it was a lot of missed opportunities. And Biden didn't collapse, so it's kind of a victory for him just because he didn't collapse.
Yeah, I thought he actually won the first third of the debate, and then Trump kind of took over, actually saying some coherent, intelligent things. But I'm obviously a bit biased as an ANCAP. I think Biden's actual policies are insane. But if you are already a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat, you know, person, you're going to think of his policies as perfectly reasonable. So, or maybe you disagree. I don't know. It's hard for me to really judge where people are thinking these days. But it did seem to be like Trump was trying to get Biden to commit to actually having a position on something. And Biden would just like kind of like squirm off and like not answer the question or kind of like give some kind of middling answer, trying to appease this widely fractured left that believe wildly different things. And I think he knows that, which is why he's basically, like I said, the Rorschach test of presidents right now, where he is whatever you think he is, whatever you need him to be, vote for him because he's basically nothing. He's just a wad of dough that you could mold him into whatever you want. Whereas Trump is like, no, you actually have to have a position on something. And then so that people can decide for themselves whether they prefer my position on it or your position. It's kind of what politicians have always sort of been about, but we're in this kind of unique position where Trump is just the evil villain person. And then Biden is just the not Trump option. And Trump's trying to make it, no, we actually need to talk about policy and ideas. And Biden's just like, hey, man, I'm not this guy, so vote for me, right? I don't know how things are going to go, but it is kind of a somewhat entertaining shit show, I guess. I wasn't as entertained because, like we talked about, Hillary Clinton was a much more dynamic sparring partner. She like lobbed up these weak attempts that Trump would just smack down and make everybody laugh. But Biden doesn't really do that. He just kind of plays the old weak man, kind of like Mr. Nice Guy, and doesn't really give a lot of ammunition to Trump. So it wasn't as funny. It wasn't as dynamic. It was more just Trump poking Biden to get him to actually take a position on something. I don't think that that's the best look for either person. So I could see why a lot of people came away from the debate as being very underwhelming.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Now, I have seen Biden get angry and kind of snap at people who ask him questions like on the campaign trail and whatnot. And I wonder if he does actually go through two more of these debates, if Trump will get him on one of those and get him to commit and overreact to something and like actually challenge him to a fight or something ridiculous. Because it seems like Biden is the type of guy who you can goad him into that where he'll make an ass of himself. And so far, out of the dozens of times that he's done it, and I've seen clips of it, it doesn't seem to get a lot of play in the mainstream media, but any one of those disqualifies him for me. Well, I mean, granted, I'm an anarchist, so like they're all disqualified just by default, but I mean, the guy's clearly a nut and, you know, not fit, probably has dementia, has declined rapidly, especially in the last 6 months to a year. You compare some of his stuff back when, you know, he was even doing the Democratic debates earlier, like 2 years ago. He was far more coherent, and even more so back when he was VP with Obama.
Indeed, yeah. You know, at one point during the debate, Trump actually called out that Biden said, "You know, you called a bunch of military people stupid bastards," and Biden just flat out denied it, which is weird because there's plenty of like actual video evidence of this event happening. So it's, I don't know if Biden's in such, I mean, all it did was deny, and then Wallace would help him like, you know, obfuscate and like deflect over to some new thing that they needed to talk about instead. But that evidence is easily Googleable. And is he just counting on, you know, his base not to Google it? Probably because the Republican side already knows it and knows it to be true. But, you know, the mainstream media isn't touching it with a 10-foot pole. So I don't know. Biden is in a weird position where he doesn't really know what to do, and he can't actually come out as being an actual candidate that has positions on things and can actually say things. It's just the most bizarre thing. So ultimately I think it wasn't as entertaining as otherwise could or should have been. Not that I give a shit politics. People put their hopes in these things and it's just leading people down the status path. So I think it's all a shit show, but I don't know. Maybe this will convince more people to divorce themselves from the political process and stop believing in the authority that is government. I don't know.
Right. And we better drop it or there will be trouble. But I do have one more point to make, and that is related to this clap for that, you stupid bastards, is I find it ironic and funny that that was the thing that Trump had been blamed for in the past month in the mainstream media, and they were making hay out of it. And it turns out that that wasn't true. And it was actually Biden who had disparaged those very same types of people. So it's just so bizarre that there's all this projection and it only seems to go in one direction. And the media only reports on it when it's in one direction, and it's ignored when it's actually the person who's accusing the other of doing it, who was actually doing it. I think I've gone cross-eyed, but you get my point, right?
I do. Yeah, no, it's true. It's crazy. When Trump brought it up, you know, Wallace and Biden, you know, Biden did his best to just deny it. And then Wallace was doing his best to move on to a topic that, you know, it's far less uncomfortable. It was quite obvious and apparent to me. I don't know if any Democrat necessarily picked up on it. Who knows?
Well, all right. Well, hey, if you want more debate analysis, hit our Patreon bonus content, actualanarchy.com/Patreon. And this episode is actualanarchy.com/201. Check it out. And we're going to move on to the last narrative portion of the show, introduce our guest right after these messages. Hey everyone, it's Daniel Elwood and Robert Paul Johnson. We are the Last Nighters. You can find us on the Launchpad Media, where they're always launching new ideas in your direction. You can also find us on the Last Nighters, or rather lastnighters.com. We also now have the custom URL at the old YouTube. So you can go to youtube.com/lastnighters and subscribe, hit the bell icon, get notifications, and interact with us. watch the live streams and all that good business. We're going to be doing RoboCop tonight, which is a really fun movie. And I haven't seen it in a long time. I'm glad that our buddy Mike C., who was our guest, he's been on many times in the past, and he's almost like a third wheel co-host type. Actually, that didn't sound good. I meant it in a good way, Mike. Your move, creep. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, war is peace, freedom is slavery, and ignorance is strength. I'm Mike C.
Yeah, now you do music at Mechanical Dream Revolution on the old SoundCloud, and you are currently working on a new season. The latest projects have been devoted or broken up into seasons. So you're working on season three now. I think you're about halfway through that, and you're looking at a hopefully Christmas time release. Though I think you promised me, well, promise is such a dirty word these days, but you suggested that there might be some teaser content that we can share related to this episode. So I won't hold you to it, but if you do, we're going to have that available for people at lastnightedge.com/144, which is where the show notes and more can be found for tonight's episode.
Yeah, I'll try to get something done tomorrow morning. I've been pulling my hair out a bit.
All right. Well, don't stress. Don't stress. There's plenty of other good stuff that we're happy to share.
Well, you can't not stress. There's a great deal. Well, you know what? I got a kind of a Zen thing going on with this collapse of Western culture. I'm sort of seeing, you know, but the romantic in me is very driven. And I mean, you can see that in the music, right? So it's sort of, I'm trying to reconcile the nihilistic, the moral nihilism of my intellect and the romance of wanting to prevail.
Okay. I can see that. Now, I might be a bit biased because I'm probably your biggest fan and your biggest listener, probably.
by a margin.
But it is definitely good stuff. And I think as we were talking to Robert earlier in the pre-show and even in the earlier portion of this show, that it is kind of like whatever you want it to be. Like, you can read into it what you want. And I think
the Joe Biden of music.
Yeah.
My God, that's insulting. It's more like, okay, so I got a guy in the Netherlands I talked to, and he was like, yeah, I really like a lot of the information, but you can kind of space out to it. And I'm like, yes, exactly. It's propaganda. It's trying to inform you. But another person was asking me about, like, do you think people are going to get what you're trying to say? And I'm like, well, like libertarians, if their head's already in that space, they're going to understand what I'm laying down, right? And otherwise, it's just kind of planting a seed, right? You know, if I talk about central banking being related to this, like, attack on white identity or something like that, you know what I mean? Like, not that specifically, but the neo-Marxist rebranding and of grievance culture, you know, feminism and BLM and stuff like that. Like, I can kind of talk about that stuff, I think, in an accessible way.
Right? Yeah. How I look at it is it's sort of like a long form aural, A-U-R-A-L, meme. So like audio, like component of a meme, but you're conveying a message, but it's more longer than, you know, just seeing a meme in like 10 seconds and getting the whatever message is being conveyed.
Yeah, I'm definitely utilizing, like, it's a mimetic attempt. It's a mimetic warfare, essentially, right? And I do see myself, I don't know, like, for lack of a better word, it's propaganda. I'm approaching it as propaganda. I want my ideas to get out there, and I want to make them as accessible and appealing as possible. But I mean, that's just true of an advertisement as well, right? So,
yeah, just like our buddy Paul Verhoeven, who did RoboCop, and we should get into talking about this.
Yeah.
So, if you guys are ready, let's do the old Google description, which is how we start these things off. So, RoboCop came out in 1987. It's an action / sci-fi movie, 1 hour and 43 minutes. It got 7.5 out of 10 on IMDb, 90% Rotten Tomatoes, 67% Metacritic, and 92% of Google users like it. The description reads, in a violent near-apocalyptic Detroit, you know, so like present-day Detroit, I guess, evil corporation Omni Consumer Products wins a contract from the city government to privatize the police force, and not in the way that we would want it to be, to test their crime-free or crime-eradicating cyborgs. The company leads street cop Alex Murphy into an armed confrontation with crime lord Boddicker so that they can use his body to support their untested RoboCop prototype. But when RoboCop learns of the company's nefarious plans, he turns on his masters. Came out July 17, 1987. Director is Paul Verhoeven. And is a cultural phenomena. I think we were talking in the pre-show that it's still relevant to this day. It spawned a haircut style for the coronavirus, the RoboCop, where just the face is kind of showing and they just cut what you can see in a mirror. So I'll have that meme on our show notes page. But Robert, I'll go to you because you almost have the RoboCop look going there. What's your take on the Google description in this movie with your opening salvo?
This is not specifically for this episode. This is how I look all the time. This is completely a coincidence. I did not know that this was a thing. But in your intro there, you kind of like monologued, or at least like you added in your little digs that this is not the kind of privatization that we would advocate. And you're correct, shockingly so. We actually advocate for open free market competition in the private space, not necessarily where government is handing out these sweetheart contract deals to these massive corporations. And I don't care if they're massive or what, but that they basically operate outside the law where they can, well, they are running the law in this situation where they have lack of consequences. They are not subject to market forces where they aren't going to get paid if they do a bad job. They can go ahead and murder people and it's perfectly fine. They're still going to get their sweet, sweet government cheese. So absolutely. I couldn't decide. Is this a movie critiquing capitalism or is it trying to, and just doing a really, really terrible job of it? Like some sort of like communists' perception of what capitalism is. Was that your take, Daniel or Mike? I couldn't quite decide on what it is that Verhoeven is trying to say, or the screenwriter is trying to actually say.
That's what I believe, is that Verhoeven was trying to critique capitalism as being inherently fascistic and pointing out what they think are the decay of capitalism, I guess, is what a lot of the youth say these days. But it is, right. It's showing us state-guided capitalism or state capitalism.
Which is public-private partnership capitalism.
Yeah, it's like, well, I mean, we're not, the police aren't a private security force, like you said, competing, and there's not, they're not, right? So it's like, what I love about Verhoeven, though, is that he makes these perfect films, and he doesn't really achieve what he intends to achieve. Because to me, he sells me on like an amazing thing. Like with Starship Troopers, I'm like, oh, that's like a great society. I'm not even interested in anything else now. But the whole movie was supposed to be a propaganda piece to make me like wake up to the dangers of it. And I'm like, I don't know, I'm not really a fan of democracy. So you're barking up the wrong tree. I don't like people getting together and creating a mob that dictates, what I do with my life, right? But in RoboCop, like his indictment of capitalism is that there's doctors having to advertise their services to get patients and drive their price down for heart transplants. Like, you pick the heart. And
yeah,
and I'm like, that sounds like a world I'd love to live in.
Yeah, I was like, you're threatening me with a good time here, movie, because that intro commercial that's supposed to be horrifying of doctors advertising their services and like there being different models made by different people, like that people would get to choose the model of the heart that they wanted. That sounded awesome. Like fantastic. Why wouldn't I want to be able to do that as of now?
Because,
like, do you even get different options if you're getting a replacement heart? I don't even know. You probably don't. Maybe you do.
Oh, but no, it's too
like outrageously expensive. So it's not like you could just like, oh, I want this model. Like, you're picking out a model of car, which should be the case, right?
It'll get there eventually if we're allowed to have competition over that stuff. If it isn't just a bunch of sweet government contracts and, Lockheed selling the government hammers for $2,000 a piece or whatever,
So don't forget about the $12,000 toilets. Those are pretty primo.
I think what because it is a common, it is a Marxist mindset is who's like sort of making and viewing this film in that negative way. To be softer, because I do like Verhoeven's work, I think he's very talented. To be softer, he's also just kind of undercutting the action movie as well, the horrific violence and the glorified violence and what that all means and everything. And then basically takes RoboCop as a Christian figure, right? And comes back from the dead to restore the will of law, like the the harshness of law to, I don't know, it's almost like an antichrist. Because he's not forgiving. He's dispensing justice, which is just murder in a really shiny suit.
Right, and that seemed to be kind of the MO for the law enforcement like apparatus in this, even when it was the cops themselves or the ED-209s. It's like, you have 15 seconds to comply, otherwise you get shot like 100 times.
Yeah, know? It seemed like overkill, but that's, I think that is supposed to be the satire, right? Is it supposed to be over the top? So, and then the commercials are supposed to make us go, oh my God, how callous is this society? You know, they're playing that Nukem game and, you know.
Right,
right. And then there's a human right. You shouldn't have to pay for it, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And there's also like all the news reports, like, oh, the South African neutron bomb or the Star Wars orbiting peace platform accidentally lasered to death like half of California.
Yeah, 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 stuff like that. So, I mean, it's not like he is shitting on capitalism or state-guided capitalism. I'm not really sure. But he also does talk about how like corporatocracies and the connection between government and corporations and how they get too monolithic to control. So, I mean, we agree on that is bad, that like Amazon is like essentially they took all of the wealth and transferred it to Amazon, Google and Apple and Walmart over the last 8 months. It's the largest wealth transfer in history. So we're kind of like we're on board with not allowing monopolies through government force, right? So, indeed. I mean,
not so shutting down all the mom and pop competition.
Yeah, it's through, like through Amazon. Yeah. Yeah, just like thank God Amazon boxes are immune. You know,
right? And you can't catch COVID in a Walmart.
Yeah, but you know, you want to talk about, and it's so crazy because it's like it's Marxist messaging, and that's the driving force to get everybody to vote and get on board with these massive political unions. And the effect is to empower corporations, multinational, supranational organizations that just have had like the largest wealth transfer to them in human history. And it's the exact opposite of the redistribution that they're marketing, which maybe is just the nature of advertising. I don't know. Like, politics is.
No, I think that that's a great point because they're finding a mechanism or a vehicle that works. It's effective. You know, it's appealing to people, this envy, this drive for, well, they're doing better than me or they have more than me and I want a piece of that. So I'm going to vote me a piece of that because these people are going to promise me more than those people. And so I'm going to vote for them and agitate for them. Yeah. And then they use that. It gets twisted around and used for the exact opposite of what they, claim to desire or represent. But most people can carry, unfortunately, most people can carry these incongruent, illogical, contrasting beliefs at the same time and have no issue with it. Like cognitive dissonance, I know it's a psychological phenomenon. It should fuck with people. Think. Yeah, but yeah, they've broken that synaptic connection or whatever. Like it doesn't seem to bother people.
Orwell talked about this specifically. You consciously realize the contradiction and solve it, and then forget that you solved it. Like you accept both the contradiction. You basically consciously tell yourself, it's okay. It's fine. They can both exist. And then you make yourself forget. You put that down the memory hole, that mechanism. That's doublethink. You described it. And this is exactly what people do. It's like terrifying, you know, with the contradictions with like, I don't want to get into mask shit again, but it's just like, that's not how viruses work. That's not how immune systems work. The statistics are all been completely like grossly manipulated and exaggerated. And you point these contradictions out to people and they're like, they look at you like you're in fucking Invasion of the Body Snatchers. And they point and start screaming and everybody else does the same thing. You know, like it isn't about intellect. It's about control and submission, right? So
right,
how to get
right
to that from RoboCop? I'm not sure, but.
Hey, you know, we do what we do here. Well, let's bring it back to RoboCop. And I know, Robert, you were still kind of mid-salvo there, mid-backstroke. Is there anything you want to like add before we move on to Mike for his take? Because we're already, I don't know, we're all over the place.
I don't even know where we're at right now, Daniel. So let's just continue on with whatever it is we're doing at the moment.
Okay, all right. Well, Mike, what's your take on just the overall? You sort of already went into it a little bit, but like, what do you think Verhoeven was trying to do, and what does he actually accomplish? You mentioned with Starship Troopers that he meant to make something one way, and then it kind of got reinterpreted another way in the culture, and it was even very different than than the novel, right? The intention of the novel.
Well, okay, so I can't, I mean, I am speaking for him all the time, but I can't actually decide, you know, like I know that what he said in interviews and stuff and his intentions, but I think ultimately what it does, a lot of his films, is he takes the essence, the emotional experience of some sort of something in the zeitgeist, like the action film, and sort of what consumerism is as a driving force, and he makes you consciously aware of that emotional experience. So with the action film, he's making you a little more aware of what, like how that violence is titillating and what all of that means to you, that it's like this naked, aggressive, you know, I don't know, masculine sort of force in the movie, right? Where it's like, well, we want to shoot rapists in the dick. We want a fucking cop to go out and do his job flawlessly in such a way and to be indestructible. And we do want that. And we're all like, yeah, fucking just, you know, and he goes to that fucking warehouse and just like blows everybody away. It's just this power fantasy, right? In a lot of ways. And I think he wants, I don't know if he wants that or not, but what I get out of that experience is basically he takes the action movie and he makes it sardonically aware of itself.
Right. He cranks it up to 11 to show
and
the highlight.
So you can actually register it. Yeah. Sorry.
Like movies like Cobra or Commando or any number of Schwarzenegger movies in those films were all over the top ridiculous.
But they're taking it at face value. And they're fun.
Right.
Like they do have fun with themselves. Like there's a lot of cheesy one-liners where, you know, he's like, you promised you'd kill me last. I lied. And then he drops him off the building. That's fantastic. I love watching Arnold Schwarzenegger hold a guy upside down with one arm and then drop him to his death because they stole his daughter. Like everyone can get behind these things, right? And we can get behind shooting a rapist in the dick while they're trying to like fuck with somebody, you know, like nobody's going to argue with that except for like, I don't know, that guy doing that. You know what I mean? So,
yeah,
they also like, I think it simultaneously tries to point out the callousness of that sort of fascist thinking. And when I say that like fascist, I mean like no talk, just violence is the authority by which we derive all other authorities, right? Like law is essentially how do we apply violence to keep people to protect people's property, essentially, right? I mean, is that not, that's supposed to be what the state does,
right? When is violence justified?
Yeah. And if the state had a 2% flat tax to deal with and that was the budget, it would probably actually achieve that goal because it would not be able to overextend or mission creep, you know, with no knock warrants and wars on drugs. And, you know, like if it had just enough money to just, you know, basically try to ensure people's property rights in the moment, like you could call somebody to show up and help it, yeah. You know, that might actually work, but like we have basically a 50% tax, like 50% of everyone's productivity goes to the state.
Well, I think so, in the last 6 months, it's probably gone up significantly.
Yeah.
When you consider the inflation tax, it's going to be hitting us. And then also the total removal of people's productive capacity many respects.
So, I mean, how do you even quantify that when the law says you can't do this?
Yeah. Mission creep has become the mission. It's creeped pretty much all the way.
Yeah. It's always been like that. So, but again, so like the city ran the cops into the ground. I am going to try to pull this back into RoboCop now for you.
Thank you.
I'm a great guest. I'm a good man. Basically, like it makes sense that Omni Consumer Products would have to take that contract. But it's like that's the worst possible. I mean, we want it privatized, but like that's the worst possible thing because they're worse than the government because they don't even have laws to stop them from. They don't even have like there are no consequences for a corporation the same way there are at least for government people, right? Like you can at least fire government people, you know. But,
and it shows that they would like in the movie, right?
Yeah.
They have the whole crux of the film come down to that RoboCop can't even do anything against an executive of Omni. Is that right?
Yeah, directive number four. He can't even arrest him.
Right. So it's like they're immune to any kind of prosecution. Like if they could come up with like corporations essentially write the laws as they do now to not apply to them, or like they have the lawyers and the infrastructure.
Or if they do apply to them, it's because they can handle it, but their competitors can't.
Yes. And that's the thing is, like, so they would go out and they could, at that point, you could enact violence on, you could impose the law, in quotation marks, upon other corporations, right? Which is what we're talking about. We're talking about boundaries and submission and control to whatever dictates.
Yeah. So I didn't mean to sidetrack you, Robert. Sorry. I was just trying to make a
little. No, you were helping
me. That sounds smart, point.
No, it's good.
I should talk about my song, actually. That was like kind of a turning point. But I called it Equitus Ex Machina because I was trying to capture the idea of chivalry, because that's what cops are. We have, like...
Robert's intrigued.
Yeah, well, no,
cops
because
are
we...
chivalry?
You know,
what?
Well, the concept is chivalrous. The concept is to try to create a higher standard, a higher code of behavior for those that are enacting violence, right?
You mean because, the marketing, like, the protect and serve on the side of the vehicle.
Well, no, I think there's honest intention there. I think, like, I mean, cops suck, but, like... The idea is that the guys that are allowed to commit violence to uphold the law or keep the peace, whatever that means,
ought to be held to higher standards.
Have to have rules, right? As opposed to the anarchy of just the toughest guy in town deciding everything, right? And then, like, everybody gangs up on him. And, like, I do agree with that more natural sort of solution. But as a culture, we move towards a model that had a more codified model of that. A more codified set of rules. Like, okay, so if you're a knight, you have to behave this way. You have to, there are certain ways you can engage in war, and there are certain ways you're supposed to treat civilians, right?
You take the longer
samurai, you have Bushido. The different codes of conduct. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and so, like, and that's exactly why the fantasy of RoboCop is so appealing, is because he actually articulates what we want out of a lawman, because he's flawless and he's invulnerable, nigh invulnerable, but he's also owned by a corporation. So ultimately, the one flaw in that is that he can't go against his masters. So I mean, I don't know. That's an intriguing story to me. I think that's why it's so appealing, and it's so simple and blatant and accessible.
Right, like,
you don't have to
never arrest politicians. So yeah, they don't. Like, investigative cops, detectives, don't go around investigating, you know, somebody for actually breaking the law, like, if they're a politician.
Yeah, no, there was a guy interviewed, and he was basically like, what happens is you start on a drug bust or some sort of child or human trafficking, especially. So you start chasing that, and eventually you catch enough fish and you start unraveling this network, and you encounter a politician or somebody with too much power, and you have to stop the case. So you can arrest employees and you can shoot soldiers, but you can't shoot generals, you know.
Yep.
So you end up with Batman beating the shit out of fucking mentally ill people in dark alleys instead of taking out the Bezos / whoever he fucking paid money to, like, you know.
Yeah, the big fish.
Sign the bill off on only Amazon's allowed to exist now.
Right.
You know.
Exactly.
So yeah. I mean, in that sense, the people that hate capitalism are kind of on your side. They just don't understand it the same way. They don't really understand the game theory and what's actually happening, and they have a bunch of words that they were given that kind of confuse them about, like, what is actually, you know, like, what the actual situation is. Because corporations are usually pretty terrible.
Yeah. You know? I found when I've ever debated somebody, we can't agree on what the term capitalism means. You know, I try to say, okay, let's distill it down to, I'm advocating for just everything being a voluntary transaction.
Well, that's exactly the path of the conversation you should take, because capitalism reduces a complex system of voluntary action to its most static and simple component, capital, which is not really, the capital is just a tool. That's like calling, like, building a house hammerism.
Yeah.
It's like, well, there's more to it than just the hammers and the nails.
And the sickles.
And the sickles.
So do we know how old Verhoeven was when he made this film? 20s,
well, I'm 40s. Pretty sure Google knows, since that's the only fucking search engine on the internet. How old was Paul? Hopefully it's been listening to me, so it knows how to spell Verhoeven for me.
Yeah, I'm guessing it was in his mid to early, the late, maybe 20s. I can't imagine he was in his 30s. Yes, it just seems like such a cartoonish view of capitalism.
Well, state capitalism again, right? That's the
right,
one
but,
thing is that it is.
You would make that distinction.
Corporatism. No, for sure. They certainly the language in it is very like, and it's funny because like in a sequel, there's a commercial for a. There's a commercial for a a car defense system that kills the person trying to break into your car, and we're supposed to look at that and go, "My God, that's so callous." And I'm like, "Fuck you! Don't steal my car." Like I don't know what the hell's the problem. Like you break into somebody's car and you die. That sounds ideal. Like that's gonna limit the gene pool to people that don't steal cars, you know. So, but we're supposed to take that, you know. The movie is telling us that we should be upset about that, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay. So if he was born in 1938, he made RoboCop in 1987, nine.
Are you kidding me?
What? Sorry.
He's in his 49.
Yeah. You think that this is like a young man's take? Is that what you're saying, Robert?
Yeah, no, it seems like a young man who just graduated from college's view of the world of.
I like to use the word now. I love the word sophomoric. It sounds really smart.
Yeah, I don't know. I was reading into this a little bit, and we mentioned all those other like action movies of the 80s. And I guess when he read the script, he's like, yeah, I don't want to do this. This is just like Commando, Predator, or Cobra, whatever. But then his wife read it. And was like, no, there's a human element here. There's a soul to it.
Really was, though.
But that's what convinced him to want to do it. So that makes me think that he was looking for something that was more than just that young man's, like, what you're seeing, Robert. I think he's looking for something that has a little bit more nuance to it. And then he's kind of going over the top, if you will. But he certainly does have that perspective that probably is a misunderstanding of what capitalism is. I mean, he's what, Dutch, right? He's European dude. So he, you know, probably has like a certain take on these things.
It does attack specifically corporatism and crash commercialism and consumerism and ignoring like, you know, the degradation of a community. Right. So I can get behind those things, and it doesn't actively say, hey, like money caused this problem. It just says like, look how fucking ridiculous people are behaving without guidance or something like that. Right. So I don't know. Like,
yeah,
it is more against omni-consumer products than capitalism in general. But I do agree to a large extent. It does conflate corporatism with crony capitalism with, you know, sort of a free market.
Right. And there's not a whole lot. Oh, go ahead, Robert.
Well, my big, I don't know, something that stuck out to me was when Murphy and the girl, I don't know the lady's
Lewis.
Name. Lewis.
Officer Lewis.
Are chasing after the enemy gangster guys. And they track him down to this abandoned factory. And Murphy comes upon these thugs having this conversation.
Oh, yeah.
This very much conversation where they're just, you know, just happen to be talking about, you know, debating, you know, like capitalism and whatever.
It's just the market, man.
It's just the market. But the one guy is, you know, questioning whether they don't just keep stealing instead of like reinvesting this money that they steal into these legitimate enterprises. And this other guy is like, and then this is the quote. There's no better way to steal money than free enterprise. And this I reacted very.
Yeah, I know. I can see you punching your screen over that. Yeah, I know. And like, yeah, what? That's like certainly.
There's a
damning.
Massive difference. Free enterprise involves voluntary exchange, involves a lot of work, and you're not stealing by definition.
Yeah.
It seemed as very sophomoric idea of what.
Yeah. I mean, but okay, I don't want to be the asshole defending that position.
Yeah, you are.
I do agree with you. But what's funny is that, like, you do have to talk about bamboozling and then a culture that's been so dumbed down, they like a show that with the guy going, I'd buy that for a dollar, right? Like,
it's like Idiocracy.
They're pointing out how fucking idiot. Yeah, because, like, we've had this problem for so long. So, and he doesn't say that. So he's obviously blaming the free market.
Well, but I took that conversation to being. the director or the author's narration.
A little bit. 100%. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right about that.
It seemed like a natural conversation that just two thugs just happened to be having.
No, it's a Kevin Smith moment.
They were injecting that narrative into it. Like, yeah, this is my voice. I'm trying to make a claim with this film, and then these are the tools I'm using to make that claim.
Yeah, it's like the moments in Kevin Smith films where fucking Kevin Smith talks to the camera are less on the nose than that particular moment in that movie. In RoboCop, there's no better way to steal money than free capitalism or free enterprise. And I mean, I don't know. I guess he just, you know, like, because you do, you know, sometimes you bamboozle people with, you know, whatever. But yeah, it seemed like a very Marxist state sentiment.
Definitely.
And then again, you need a Christ figure to come and instill a moral code on people, right? So they behave properly, which is RoboCop. So yeah, like basically the corporation and the petty crime are the same thing, and only a heroic government robot can, you know, you could interpret it that way, that only a heroic government robot could possibly save us. That's
kind of cool with his first two prime directives, you know?
Yeah, just not that fourth one, which we don't know, which is like...
Why do we like the third one?
Protect our greatest ally. Hmm? What was the third one?
Uphold the law.
Depends on the law. I don't know.
Exactly, because I have issues with all of them. The first couple of them are kind of like
ensure the public trust.
Ensure the public trust.
It to me, it meant be worthy of the public's trust in what you're doing.
Yeah.
Serve them as they would want to be served.
They just, I think that the word law means something.
Of all time has said something similar to that.
Right, but he's RoboCop. Like, that's he's programmed to do this.
Right, and he actually has hard codes that prevent him from violating that, unlike...
Right, and then protect the innocent, I'm okay with that.
Sure.
Okay, so the word law to the people in that, or to RoboCop in the movie itself, probably means something a little bit different than... Right? I think a lot of people, when they think of law, they think about shooting rapists in the dick and stopping violent crime, right? That's what goes to their head. That's the marketing for law, right?
Well, that's
stopping
the law
murders,
I'm okay
stopping
with.
Rapes, right? No, but the law.
I'm not okay with the a third of a football field thick of pages of laws and regulations.
That's what I mean. It's like the it's not as advertised what law is, right? Justice. He probably should have meant justice. He probably should have said uphold justice or something like that, right? But uphold the law is his programming, and we're not behind it because you know what law actually is as an extension of existing power structures. Essentially, established power creates laws.
Right.
Because you don't really need to write down don't murder people. We all kind of know. We just wrote it down so nobody could go, I don't fucking know. Nobody told me, right? Like, so...
Yeah, this movie could easily be a horror movie.
Oh yeah,
where he's upholding horrific laws. I mean, you could imagine a movie being made where slavery is legal, and he goes around and captures black people and brings them back to the plantation, or any number of things that are horrific laws, or he's busting pot smokers or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
Now, or serving no-knock warrants and getting people shot for like $50 worth of meth.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago.
Yeah, there's that too.
I gotta say this. The state executes twice as many people through no-knock warrants as it does through executions, death penalties.
Is that really? That's an interesting stat.
It's a good workaround, right? It's like, you know what? Let's go serve a no-knock warrant. Can't take this guy out of the equation because it's going to cost us 10 years of appeals and horse shit trying to get this guy murdered. Just walk into the Coke factory and say, come quietly, there'll be trouble. And if they give you trouble, kill everyone there.
Yeah, now, that brings a question, like, because RoboCop was virtually indestructible, that we find in RoboCop 2, not quite so, especially when there's a 12-year-old boy involved, he gets cut up and whatnot. But when there's no threat to him, it's like... They're shooting at him, but it's not effective.
Yeah.
So if it's not a threat to him, is he actually defending himself? I mean, yeah, they do intend to harm him. They are trying to harm
him, kill him. No, he's not defending himself. He's defending society. He's upholding the law and he's protecting the public trust. And so right, he's serving the public trust. He's keeping the peace and he's upholding the law is what he's doing by killing all those people trying to manufacture a product and sell it to people.
Right. But his only ability is to murder. Because
he can call a rape crisis center.
That's true too. Yes,
he can notify psychologists.
He doesn't have agility or sufficient dexterity to take somebody in and arrest them. You don't see him arrest anybody.
He can walk away slowly from
Whitaker in that scene. Takes him in. He just has to murder everybody else away. First. He arrests one person in this movie, and it's Clarence Whitaker
after abusing him.
Yes. I got a confession. He needed to beat him up for that confession.
Okay, all right.
So torture works.
The guy, when he helps the mom and pop shop with the robber,
mm-hmm.
He just throws the guy into a cooler and knocks him out. And he's like, oh, another crime solved, right? So I don't know, maybe that's pretty libertarian. I mean, the people that own the shop can figure out what to do with him.
Well,
he's just kind of a helping hand.
That's the unleash the cops. That's the immediate consequence for your violent behavior.
Yeah. And the thing is, we all kind of agree on that at whatever, because it's masculine. It's like he's doing that, so they should have just killed him. You know, he's trying to rob the place. You're pretty free to do that to protect yourself and your property, especially when somebody brings a gun to the situation.
Right. And he's just an extension of the rights of the shop owners.
Yeah, really. In that sense, which is what the law is supposed to be, which is why this movie is appealing, because they basically create something that can actually implement that, actually protects people's rights. But it's corrupted by the corporate structure. It's corrupted by corporations. So I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot there. And he is obviously European socialist. But there's a lot of appealing sort of ideas in it about like stopping people directly, right? Whereas opposed to pussyfooting around, right?
Yeah, I think that was a point I made in our previous episode that a lot of the problems we have today is because people are insulated or subsidized away from having consequences for their choices and behaviors.
Yes, absolutely. And again, but you're victim blaming now. Like they took the high ground and they got all the words lockdown. They control the language, right? Like the Frankfurt School, right? Where the Nazis came in and then the Frankfurt School came over to Columbia University.
I hear that conspiracy theory, my friend.
Well, anyway, a bunch of fucking commies came over because the Nazis were trying to get rid of the commies in their country. And then they took over their fucking university system. They completely changed the way academia functions and all the language used. And then, like, you know, within our lifetime, we watched them take all of these hills of language control and tell us exactly like how we're allowed to have this conversation.
Yeah.
You know, and you telling people that they should have responsibility and think about the consequences of their decisions is essentially victim blaming.
Right. Well, that's how I'm raising my kids, that you need to be aware of
and not be victims. Yeah. I mean, that's ideal, isn't it?
Yeah. Be aware of the choices you're making and what the potential consequences are and weigh those against the costs that you may incur and make the appropriate decision.
But I think I think the appeal of RoboCop is that we would like there to be a helping hand, like a godlike figure that could come in and protect us, you know, if we called them, if we wanted them to come, right? That's all.
Right.
Like, that's what's appealing about it. And he managed to use that as a vehicle for, you know, some indictments of capitalism and some indictments of, you know, free market. But yeah, it's like, We know that that's not a fair analysis of the free market, though, because it's not free. There's nothing free about it, you know. So,
right, but to the average movie-going consumer,
they're like, yeah, capitalism is pretty bad. Look at how fucking shitty, you know, how crass everything is. And I'm like, it sort of gets there, but we would form groups. We form groups. We form,
yeah,
moral compasses.
I think it's easy low-hanging fruit for them to continue to play on that narrative and. I don't know if it's part of a concerted effort to propel a narrative that over the decades and generations that continues to wear away at whatever vestigial, you know, admiration for freedom and free enterprise was. Because it seemed like, you know, in the 50s and 60s, that seemed to be like, oh, you know, with the Red Scare and everything, like free enterprise was very much the rhetoric.
Yeah, but they were setting up the Social Security system, and they were like the GI Bill and all that shit coming out of it, right? And like that was, that prosperity was all on the back of a massive government project called World War II, you know?
Well, yeah, in the like mythos.
It's horse shit, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah, in the mythos, that's what it was.
Yeah.
But yeah, anyway, let's talk about Verhoeven just a little bit more, because he has a stable of movies that came out around the same, you know, decade or so. Was Total Recall one of them as well?
I believe he did. Yeah, he did Total Recall right after RoboCop in 1990.
Right, so he had a good run, and there is a series of elements that he seems to have in there, and that is like a lot of these news media type things happening, and then these satirical kind of commercial things happening, but they're all sort of related to the real world, but in a very exaggerated way. He often has this co-ed, naked co-ed scene seems to happen, like a co-ed shared locker room with a half a second of boobage.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
At in least this in, and Starship Troopers.
Yeah.
With
well, I wouldn't say, I mean, two out of whatever 12 movies isn't necessarily a trend, but he certainly in his, the two movies that I like of his the most that happened.
Right.
And you know, maybe tits influenced my decision to like those movies.
That's, I think, Total Recall is probably a good one to do at some point on this show.
Because of the three tits.
Well, yeah, but it's also a fun movie. Though I'm surprised that they'll take these movies that are actually pretty decent from the 80s and then try to remake them. I know that we're not supposed to mention that.
You can talk about it. There were some interesting ideas in it.
There was a remake of this
absolutely
one.
Absolutely shit the bed, because RoboCop is an R-rated film. Straight, like, that's how you start. If you're not starting with R, then like just get out of here. Made it straight.
I heard that they had to send back the scene where Murphy gets shot up when he's before RoboCop 17 times to get an R rating instead of an X.
Yeah. Wouldn't they just, in 87.
Yeah.
It was pretty horrific. And again, this is the fucking, this, and that's not even government. That is an organization emerging because the government was threatening to regulate the movie industry. So the movie industry created this guild of a bunch of fucking boomers, or not boomer, but at the time they were whatever the equivalent of boomers was then. You know,
they were the cultural conservatives of that era.
And they're like, you know, and I don't know. I mean, I understand where they're coming from, but I am like, I'm 2/3 libertarian and 1/3 fascist, right? Like, I really do believe in a free market. I can understand why people would be concerned with the direction of art, but I mean, it's not a good idea to burn art or to limit it. It is
equilibrium style. It's Equilibrium and Fahrenheit 451.
Yeah, like it's very important to communicate. So right. I don't know. Like, if you're worried, like you should. My fascism comes out when I'm like, we should beat the shit out of people that are trying to instill violence or are being violent. You know what I mean? I'm like, criminals need to be punished, basically, right? That's where I want harder lines. I don't want a limit of freedom in exchange and the exchange of ideas. It's, you know, but that's always what they're after.
Yeah, I think that word is sullied, and so perhaps it's maybe not marketing the appropriate term to use.
Yeah, but I'm like, I don't. Like, what do I call myself if I'm like? Because I'm not democratic. I'm anti-democracy. So like, there's not really a lot of ways to describe, because they're going to label me that anyway. So I might as well just embrace it. You know what I mean? Because they just keep calling you these names. Like they associate libertarianism with Nazism. That's insane.
Yeah. Because they put Nazism on the far right, and it's in no way, shape, or form related to socialism, even though socialism's in the name. But just because it's in the name doesn't mean that that's what it is. But Antifa is anti-fascist because it's in the name. See? It all works.
Yeah, it works great. It works great. We got here. I think I derailed us a little bit, and I'm sorry for that. But
no, it's okay. But you were talking about communication earlier, and Robert's internet is kind of shitting the bed.
Okay. Well, that's fair.
I'm going to try to loop him in just a little bit.
Just break it up. I could actually, I'm pretty good at that. I'm not bad at sound bites, if you've noticed.
Well, Robert, I wanted to direct this to you if you can hear me. There is a serendipitous moment in that scene where he shoots the guy in the dick who's about to rape that woman, in that how it was scripted, he was gunned to her head and Murphy was going to shoot the bad guy in the head. But it came about this idea like, oh, if he's holding her up just enough, they can do this scene where he shoots through the skirt and shoots the guy in the dick, which I think makes the scene, and it kind of flavors the rest of the entire movie in this over the top sort of, like, there's all this extreme violence and gore, but then there's also this biting humor that's also related to it. And I think that without that moment, this is an entirely different movie. I think it's a defining moment in the movie.
Well, that's interesting, because I had the exact opposite impression from that scene.
Mm.
I thought that when he shot the guy in the dick, it didn't even really register with me. It was the whole movie is so saturated in over the top violence that for me, that was just another gunshot. It was just another shot and another guy getting shot by whatever. I mean, in the very opening, where the executive gets shot by Ed 209, he gets so riddled with bullets that at one point I was just like laughing. Like, it was just hilarious. Like,
you're supposed to laugh at that.
It's yeah. Hilarious. But then you just get so desensitized. You're so hit over the head with so much violence. And I understand Mike's point that it's kind of a satire of the action genre, but I really didn't see the shooting in the dick thing as being that much different than any more of the over the top violence. So I guess I had a different take on it than you did. I do have a question for Mike later on, but I want to finish this take for you. So if this kind of defines the film, how does the rest of it kind of play off from this shooting the dick moment for you, Daniel?
Well, I think this is the thing that puts it into the place of comedic. Like, without this happening, then the rest of it is just over the top violence. But with this moment, it adds that tinge of humor, dark humor.
Irony, maybe?
Well, but it was in the middle, though. Like, you know, when in Indiana Jones in the Temple of the whatever.
Crystal Skulls?
Temple of Doom, where he pulls out the gun and he shoots the guy who's got the sword.
Right, I made a great meme out of that.
Yes, you did. You did an excellent meme. You did a great job. But that was very much a comedic moment where none of the preceding action and none of the after action was anything like it. And it was,
that it was also different, also serendipitous.
It had a different beat to it. And that it stuck out, and I still remember it to this day. Whereas this, it didn't really stick out to me. It was just another gunshot. I don't know. Mike, what do you think on this?
Well, as Mr. Plinkett might say, you didn't notice, but your brain did, right? Like, I think it's a subconscious level. Like, you're going to be like, okay, good, he got shot in the dick. That's kind of ideal for his behavior.
It's like eye for eye,
kind of a little more biblical.
Yeah, the appropriate punishment. But I was thinking of it in the counterfactual sense. Like, if that scene had played out as scripted, where RoboCop shoots him in the head, then it's just more.
It would have been less, for sure.
Action level violence. It's just more commando style violence.
Okay, well, it would have been
so. That scene was meant to portray or convey his targeting ability, right, and how he's able to make a precise shot with a hostage, and he is assured that he will hit his target. So it's a lot safer than, you know, a human trying to do that wouldn't be able to pull that off necessarily, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like Al Pacino takes the shot in Heat or whatever, and you're like, yeah, I mean, he had time to get ready and everything, but it's still a very dangerous decision to make. Generally, right. We're supposed to negotiate with people that have hostages, and it's right. Like, and maybe you should just shoot them in the dick, right?
Well, the headshot still would have conveyed that targeting ability.
Yeah, but it wouldn't have had the irony. It wouldn't have had the eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth kind of feel to it, right?
Right.
That's my opinion.
Is that the only time he does it in the film, though, where he is like making a commentary on the crime being committed?
I think it's more just like, it's all hands on. Like, he's immediately punishing stuff. I think that one in particular sticks out, maybe because he's a leftist and, you know, women's rights or whatever, but we can all get behind that, left and right. We all don't like rapists.
But the thing I like about it is that without it, it changes the flavor of the movie, and
100%.
It was scripted differently. And it was serendipitous that this occurred to them to make it different, to make it how it ended up being. And
well, similar you still to, have
you brought up. I'm gonna let you finish. But you brought up the Indiana Jones, thing. That also was serendipitous because Harrison Ford was violently ill that day, and they were supposed to have a whip slash sword fight. But because Harrison Ford was like so sick, he just like, fuck it, just shoot the guy. And that's what they shot. And it became.
Well, it's a this brilliant subversion, scene. Right? Well, and comedy is a subversion of expectations, right? And
but not
there's scripted. More. You get more out of that shot from Indiana Jones than you would have ever got from any kind of epic fight scene.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
You get way more revelations about his character.
I like the serendipity of it.
Right.
Absolutely.
Okay. But still in RoboCop, you still have that initial Ed 209 kill, and then you still have the Toxic Avenger splatter on the windshield kill.
Fuck yeah.
Yeah, that was also put back for the X rating.
Oh, really? That's not in the original R?
They should have leaned, like, I want to see an X-rated version of this film.
I think the version that you see on home media is, it has those extra 2 seconds in the Murphy execution, and I think 10 seconds in the Toxic Man.
Bitches leave.
I love Red, by the way. We talked about this in the pre-show. We burned a little content, but Boddicker is Red, dumbass. It's brilliant.
Brilliant. No, Bitches Leave, as Mike has said, is one of the great all-time movie lines. Absolutely.
Yeah, it might be my favorite. Kurtwood Smith, yeah. Red Foreman, and Clarence Boddicker. Can you fly, Bobby? I don't like cops don't like me, and I don't like cops. Are you a good cop, hot shot? Like, fuck, man, there is just. But Bitches Leave, man, that like I could just watch that on repeat for an hour, that 2 seconds. It is fucking hilarious. Because he's just like not interested in these coke hoes, right? Like he comes in and he's like, you have to leave, I'm gonna kill somebody. Like, and they're like, yep, see you later. Thanks for the coke. That's another mainstay of this movie is cocaine. So he talks a lot about cocaine and drugs. I think that drug laws exacerbate racial problems a huge amount. They tend to affect vulnerable communities more than more secure and prosperous communities. So if you have this sort of grievance culture thing going on in this racial politics, then drug laws should be the enemy, bar none.
Right. Well, that's why I don't
create so much violence.
I don't buy a lot of this defund the police and BLM stuff because they're totally ignoring the driving force between most of the interactions.
Yeah, like the more times you interact with a cop, the more likely you are to get shot, and that's just a statistical fact. You know, like they have guns, they're trained to escalate until you are controlled or dead, right?
Absolutely. They you know? Are the and ultimate on top authority. They cannot.
Fucking no-knock warrants for the war on drugs. That was made for the war on drugs, right? These no-knock warrants? Like that is so antithetical to, you know, the founding fathers and all the you know, I mean, like, I don't buy it. I don't, but it would be awesome if the reality matched the marketing for Americanism.
Right. Well, you look back at the origin of all these things, you know, a common law tradition and whatnot, they actually had like specific reasoning for why they developed the way that they did. And a warrant was meant to identify a suspicion and the items and articles sought for and the place in which they will be searched. And it was meant to be presented beforehand to the individual to authorize them to make said search.
So yeah, now it's just a piece of paper.
It's just a piece of paper. It's a ritual. It's a vestigial thing. It's no longer has any of the content or intent of the actual meaning or essence of what it was. Now it's just meant to be a step or a checkbox that, oh yeah, we did this thing because, well, it's required.
Well, and then that's your problem with law, you know, when he says uphold the law. It's like law tends to be retroactively something that legitimizes through bureaucracy what would otherwise be reprehensible behavior. Like you go into somebody's house, you kick in the door and then like and shoot people. That's not okay. That's not good behavior. We're all against that. And anybody that did that without a warrant, no knock or otherwise, would be called a murderer. So, like, unquestionably, right? So, and watching these comedies fight these cops, like, it's interesting to me because I'm like, yeah, like, the drug laws are, like, a fucking huge problem. But And they've always been racist. You know, they kicked out opium when coke was still legal because of the Chinese. It was about protecting the racial identity of America every time, right? And it affects vulnerable communities more than communities that have a leg to stand on. And like, you know, like, and I'm like, I'm pretty pro it's okay to be white, but like, I have to acknowledge that it was always okay. It was always legal for me to smoke weed in Canada. I never had a problem with cops smoking weed or acquiring it. It was a law that they could discriminately enforce against people they wanted to control.
Yeah. You want more crime, make more laws.
Yeah. And that's kind of just, you know, and it just exacerbates existing problems. I'm like the fucking, the, what is that called? Where they stole the kids and put them in school, the boarding, you know, like in Canada. I don't know about this. The more hands-on colonialist shit makes more sense in terms of what you're trying to achieve than like drug laws, which exacerbate those issues.
Okay.
Prohibition makes things a lot worse. And we know this because of the mob.
Right. And we just did Godfather and Godfather 2 in the last couple of weeks, talking a fair amount about that. Now, we're going to have to start to wind this down because we're already over time. And I feel like we barely touched on a lot of the things I wanted to talk about in the movie, unfortunately.
Just bang them off.
But anyway, let's go with any final notes from you, Robert. And then if you want to, we'll bounce off that for a moment and then we'll get into final summary and review.
Excellent idea, Daniel. Thank you very much. So I have a question for the like official fascist of the podcast, Mr. Mike C. At one point in the film, the cops are all threatening to go on strike. And at one point they actually do.
Sorry. We should strike. Fuck them.
Right.
Another great line.
Right. So the cops strike. And like the very next scene is all mass rioting and looting. It's just free for all, consequence free.
Wait, mostly peaceful.
It's mostly peaceful.
Right. Against mostly being poor.
Right. So they're looting. Fires are being set. People are just out trashing cars and things like that. So, Mr. Michael, are you of the opinion that without like the omnipresent threat of cops specifically, that this is a realistic scenario? Because I am very much of the opinion that this would speak to a mass degeneracy of society as a whole, where people don't feel that they would be held to account for their actions by anybody, not by the people that they love, not by their employer, not by the media, not by anybody, not just the cops. Not just the cops don't happen to be there right now, but their girlfriend's going to look at them differently. Their mom's going to look at them differently. They're going to think that they did a bad thing. Whereas in like today with the BLM riots and Antifa, they feel morally justified. They've got this moral philosophy to burn and riot and tear down because there's a perceived injustice somewhere. So are you on the side of the cops, that the cops are the only thing, the thin blue line between chaos and civilized society?
You know, what's funny about this is that, during filming, the reason there was another serendipitous change in the script, because they actually just filmed Detroit at the time and got those scenes of the rioting and insane violence. That's a joke. I'm not serious. Okay, so basically, how could that kind of like level of chaos manifest in a town riddled with firearms? I don't think that's realistic. I think people would have put each other in check pretty quick. But narrative is narrative. They're just trying to convey that idea. Now, I don't think cops specifically, like certainly not the way they exist right now, are necessary to society. I think the reason we buy into it is because we know that we inherently need a moral compass and some form of authority that we consent to as a group. And violence is that authority. And so I think the reason cops are appealing, and that like, I could, you know, like the question you gave me is pretty loaded. Like, no, of course not, 100%. Like, it's preposterous that the cops like, it's funny because like the cops in the States too, they're like, they're worse trained than a lot of other places, right? Because of the more free market history, or at least the marketing of the country, the marketing of the state is free market driven, but only it's free market for the poor and then socialism for the rich, right? So like the cops are usually ill-equipped, like intellectually, emotionally, right? But they're over-equipped, obviously, with equipment. You know, they got tanks and shit now. And then the laws are all completely unjust. So I don't think that's necessary to any society with what's set up. And of course, we wouldn't fall into chaos. I think that authority is something that we organically come to. And I think that, I don't know. You know that meme of like hard times make strong men, strong men make good times make weak men make hard times. That cyclic sort of thing. I think that's sort of the essence of the problem that you're talking about, right? Because it's like, what do you do with assholes that don't behave? Well, you have to fuck them up, right? And what are cops? They're just people we've deemed are allowed to go beat the shit out of people we think need their asses kicked, right? But it doesn't work because we're all behind that. We all sign on for that. But it actually, you didn't read the terms of service. It's actually about busting into somebody's fucking house and blinding their baby with a flash grenade because they've got $50 worth of meth. So coming back to...
It's another thing that crept away from what the intended thing was. And is,
well, I mean, intention, right? I'm saying that we sign on for something that we never get. We want there to be stability in a society, and we're willing to organically form that. And then politicians come along and they say, hey, I've standardized this and I can sell it to you. I can give you this. You give me the one vote and we'll have this law and it'll be like this. And you sign on and you give these cops this power, but they don't actually have like a moral code. They have a law. You know, and the laws are written by people that have a vested interest in fucking over people that can't defend themselves. So, if that makes sense, am I dodging the question?
No, you did an excellent job, sir.
So
we're far closer in beliefs than I originally thought. So that's good.
I think the Starship Troopers episode, I got a little off the rails there because I was like, fuck yeah, let's go kill them bugs. But he was talking about communists.
Was he?
He absolutely was. Because that's what they are. They're just a hive mind that you can't fucking reason with. You know what's funny though is that what I learned from, like, I'm kind of like into World War II and I look at stuff and I'm just like, man, you just can't kill communists fast enough. You do have to convince them because they'll just keep coming. Like the Germans were so efficient fighting Russia and it didn't fucking matter at all. There's a case of one guy in a tank killed or took out 24 other tanks, ran out of ammunition. It's just like, you can't beat them, man. They're always reproducing because it's just such an appealing idea to be like, look, man, if you phone this number, somebody will come and protect you. When the reality is that they're going to come and record the violence that was put upon you and take a statement. They're historians, you know? And then it's only a matter of time till when they're trying to do their job, which is apparently stop people from engaging in commerce and contraband. Some of them get shot and we have a great excuse to riot and burn shit down. When I'm like, well, you're kind of justifying, like, the riots justify what police are, which is the irony. And I don't think that's a mistake. I think that it's like we're watching fucking wrestling. You know, it's like George Soros moving fucking virus and Antifa around on a board, you know?
Well, Mike, at some point you made a point that Doc Brown here agrees with. I'm not sure which point, but...
Doc Brown?
Yeah. He's a buddy of ours. He's been on the show before.
Oh, I know. I've heard him.
Yeah, The Shining and It.
Yeah, he's your Kubrick guy, kind of.
Yeah. I'm a big fan of Kubrick. Robert, not so much. But anyway... we need to get into final summary review. We're going super long. So, Robert, why don't you take the reins here?
Okay. Well, it's always a fun time with Mike. Unfortunately, my internet is not doing well tonight. So I hope you can hear this. And I hope that I understood what was said so that I don't sound completely like Joe Biden or something. This film is a lot of fun. It's fun watching an old 80s action movie. I probably saw this, you know, maybe when it came, when it was at Video Farm, the local video rental place that was, you know, like 10-minute walk from my house. I probably saw this in the late 80s, a year or two after release. So it's been a while. It's absolutely been a while, but I have seen the remakes and the sequels as far as I know. It's not necessarily a series that I have a lot of fond memories about. I remember people talking about this is like a splatter gore film. They kind of had some ties to another movie called The Toxic Avenger, which I am vaguely familiar with, a series of low budget splatter gore kind of movies back from the 80s also. And this was like a whole genre that kind of just disappeared as far as I know. I think that probably the peak of that kind of genre is probably, well, my favorite film in this kind of thing is probably The Thing. Although I don't know if it kind of qualifies just because, I mean, it's horror and not just like ridiculous over the top violence all over the place. But the story is, you know, it's like kind of like a redemption kind of a story. It's fun. It is a superhero power fantasy. Mike is absolutely right about that. It is the justice lover in all of us wanting to have the power to enact swift and immediate consequences to those that would violate my brothers. So, you know, this is it's a fun film. It's I don't think it's perfect, but it does have interesting things to say. It's criticism of capitalism, like we said, is sophomoric, just really bad. As the world presents itself, if you were to say like, man, this unholy union of corporations and government is really bad, then, you know, I'd be more on board. But as it is, it's just like equating the free enterprise capitalism with this horrific corporate government. Nobody's responsible, no consequences for these elites. It's not what we want at all, of course. So I would say that this is like a 7. I can't, like, this isn't like high art. It's just a fun action film that actually has kind of has some meat to it, which I do appreciate. It's not like completely brainless, even though it is brainless and wrong, but it's fun. Yeah, I appreciate Mike coming on, as always, is a good. So, yeah, 7 out of, I'll give it 7 kneeling Pelosi's out of 10.
All right. Well, I hope those are maskless kneeling Pelosi's because that's the best way for Pelosi to be. You know, I hadn't seen this movie probably since I was a kid, and I watched it twice this past week. The first time just to get reacquainted with it, and the second time to kind of take notes. And man, we talked a lot tonight, and we didn't touch a lot of the notes I have. I have tons of stuff still to talk about, but we're unfortunately out of time. But if I'm looking at this movie in just the greater, you know, Verhoeven kind of catalog or his canon, I'm seeing like messaging in this, and it's kind of maybe because I've been listening to a lot of Mike's work at Mechanical Dream Revolution. But for the time and place that this was made, I think this is a brilliant film. I think it's really well done. The effects are almost seamless, other than the mecha walk stop motion animation. But, you know, like when they take his mask off and you can't really tell, the lighting is so good that you can't tell like the props and the prosthetics. Like, it actually works. And I really enjoy the over the topness of it. I love the satire. I like all of the interludes with the "I'll buy that for a dollar" guy blink consistently through it, and the little commercials and all of those things. I think it has a ton of content worth talking about. We could probably do 2 more episodes about this movie, but I really enjoyed it. I'm going to go with a 9 on this thing, I enjoyed it very much, and I think that the rest of them are garbage, but this one is really top notch. So, Mike, your take?
The rest of them, oh, like the sequels?
Well, just your overall, you know, rating review.
Oh, I don't know. 11 out of 10, 11 out of 9. When I say it's perfect, I mean, it's, it's executed perfectly. Like, it may not be, I may not agree with every aspect of it, but he made like a movie that's just flawless scene to scene. Like, there's no wasted. If anything, the ratings board, you know, took the shine off it a little bit by not like by making him show a bit more restraint. But fuck, this movie's amazing. Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to hear all the points you're trying to make. I don't even know what to say, because it's like I said, it talked a lot about. Well, I made a song, you know, that kind of honored it, and Equitus Ex Machina, which is just kind of like, Equitus is like the cavalry, right? So he's like, it's a higher level of behavior you're demanding of masculinity, and that's like a staple concept, a meme in Western culture as our foundation, but we're not really consciously aware of it anymore. That was a driving force behind stuff. So it's like, in a lot of ways, it's like lamenting a law and order that may or may not have ever been there, but we want that. We want that sort of, you know, shooting rapists in the dick. And again, it's like, it's unfortunate that that like cocaine is like the main issue. But again, it's like they robbed a bank in the first scene, so they were violating people's rights, and then he was pursuing somebody specifically, and then, you know, the people that just defended him violently were who RoboCop attacked. So like, coke was sort of in the background, the way the television was in the background, and it's like, these are bad things, but they're not actually the problem. The problem was like just bad people having nobody to fuck them up, basically. And I think, I don't know, most guys can get behind that. I don't really have like a lot to say about it, because when you watch it, you're like, yep, this is like fantastic to watch. So I don't know, 11 out of 9.
All right. Well, I buy that for a dollar. And you listeners can buy our pre-show and post-show bonus content by hitting us up at Patreon. And there is a dollar level, and a little, you know, secret. There are like different levels that you can spend more and get more. But oftentimes I, you know, fat finger it and give extra bonus content at all levels. So hit us up at lastnerds.com/Patreon, and you can get a piece of that action. You can find the show notes and more for this, including the song that Mike was talking about, at lastnerds.com/144. You can also find this at the Launchpad Media, where they're always launching new ideas in your direction. And I do have a bunch more stuff, but maybe we'll have to save that for some of the Kathleen Turner Overdrive, which is the post-show bonus content we have here. And Robert, I just wanted to mention, next week we've got another show. I can't believe it, right? We keep coming back and doing this thing. We're going to have Snobby Bobby. He was our buddy who came on for the Patriot for our 4th of July episode. And that was a really fun episode. So he's a good guy, and he's going to come back and do Demolition Man, which in some ways is a continuation of sorts.
I'm so fucking happy.
Of this story here.
Oh, so, that's awesome.
Yeah. So yeah, we'll be doing that.
Awesome.
And then Mike, I'm sure we'll have you back. I mean, I have a list of a dozen movies I want to do with you, if you're willing.
I'll see how long I last drinking the way I do.
Yeah, there you go. So that's what we'll be doing next week. Demolition Man with Snobby Bobby. Check it out. And Robert, any final words for audience, things that they can do to support us or support you, support Mike, support, you know, anything and everything?
I think you have mentioned most everything, other than, I suppose, the Patreon. You've mentioned that. I don't think you mentioned the YouTube channel, which is a thing that we do. We release every one of these on YouTube. So check that out there. If you like to listen at home, if you like to listen while you're ironing, you know, or you're slaving away, washing dishes, or all that other stuff, all that oppressive work, you can do that. Or you can go to Trumpster.com and you can buy some merchandise. So yeah, thank you for all listening. And we'll be back next week with Demolition Man. Should be a lot of fun. We'll see who wins the podcast wars for the future.
All right, well said. And Mike, thanks again. Hopefully you can stick around a little bit longer. We usually record with you for 3-4 hours, something like that. We're not even close to that. So look for more content on our Patreon, everyone. And with that, we'll say goodnight from last night. All right, and we're going to continue the Actual Anarchy podcast for a few more minutes. We were long.
The sandwich.
And we've gone strong and a little bit long. So one of the points I wanted to bring up, and I again have a bunch of them, but one of the things that I thought was interesting was how the corporation planned in advance to get appropriate applicants in position to be murdered to then become a part of this program, and what implications that have from a moral perspective, Robert.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure. So they were just waiting for a cop to volunteer by getting himself blown to pieces, right?
Right. But they pre-selected said candidates and then put them into harm's way.
Well, that is the job, though, right? You are putting yourself in harm's way by interacting with people who would, you know, well, they're essentially normal human beings that you are aggressing against. So, you know, in this film, the way that they depict the corruption of Detroit, which is not, like we've said multiple times, not far from reality at this point, you are interacting with armed people who are have no compunction with, you know, shooting you. So, as probably they shouldn't, depending on their moral outlook in terms of what you are aggressing against them for. So, yeah, what do you think, Mike? Do you think that this is a moral compunction or a moral issue with putting a cop in harm's way? And then, like, one of the caveats or the issues with the film was that they somehow agreed to this, right? That he signed some kind of a contract. Does that allow them to do whatever the fuck they want with your carcass?
Well, yeah, I think the point of the movie is that the rules and the terms of service and stuff aren't really reality. They're a virtual reality that governments and corporations cook up. And in a lot of ways, these monolithic corporations are very similar to government, right? And they bullshit us, and they create you know, like enough paperwork. The guy with the paperwork wins, right? So they create enough paperwork that you're not willing to read the terms of service, you know, 90 pages every week, you know, every time your social media account re-ups its, you know, terms of service and its you know, its security or whatever. So yeah, I mean, it's basically in my opinion, what they're talking about is how power structures will exploit systems that should otherwise be stable. So like a cop becomes a cop. I mean, theoretically, because they want to participate in the keeping of the peace and upholding the law and all that stuff. And in doing so, they don't have the tools to negotiate or navigate a relationship with a corporation that's like sinister, right?
But how could even a contract where you're basically signing away,
because they're not killing them themselves, they're just putting them in high risk areas,
right? But after they kind of like revive him or whatever, he's somewhat in this kind of life death state. But then when he's like actual RoboCop, they wipe his memories. Apparently they have the technology.
Yeah, okay, apparently he signed on to for his... So what we're talking about is the soul?
Well, or are we talking about self-ownership?
The soul doesn't exist in law, right?
Own his body.
So yeah, the corporation owns his body after he dies. It becomes default their property to use however, and they sign some sort of universal waiver for that. And then you can argue that his brain can be wiped and utilized for that and in whatever way, right? And what is stopping us from accepting that is that we know that there is the sacred fire, as Tolkien said, or consciousness or a soul that has a moral precedent that goes beyond property rights.
Well, that's what they wanted.
Exactly what the movie's about, right? In a lot of ways, is we're talking about like what is right and wrong versus what is the law.
Right, but that's also what they wanted. That's why Ed 209 didn't work and RoboCop did. It was because of that essence,
yes,
that soul.
Yes, that's the corporation is evil. It is literally stealing somebody's soul for its gain to enforce its rules and its laws on the people. And that to me is brilliant. because it exists at a narrative level, and it's like, it's just an analogy, right? Like, they don't, I don't even think it's ham-fisted, because it takes a long time to realize that that's what the movie's about, is like God and the devil. You know what I mean?
Well, and it's the final line, right?
Yeah. Like, and that's the thing. This is the indictment of capitalism in Verhoeven's mind. And I don't follow him all the way on this, but I do understand why he presents it the way he does. Is because it's not enough for us to just have like something written down in a contract. Because if you bamboozle somebody, that's still wrong, and it creates a discrepancy in society that needs to be rectified. So if too many people fuck over too many other people, then there needs to be a backlash, even if it's like voluntary. Because like, what is voluntary behavior if you're being like scammed? Or if the system you have to appeal to get compensated for being scammed or defrauded is the person is the entity that's scamming or defrauding you, right? So, and then I think that Verhoeven boiled that down to the human element of being like, it's all well and good, but like, what if they took really good cops that were from good neighborhoods and put them in bad neighborhoods to get them killed, so that they could get the good neighborhood soul and try to like put that into a robot that could like enforce our corporate laws, you know? So yeah, we stop murderers and we stop rapists, but we also enforce our property rights and diminish the rights of others, right? So, I mean, that was my take.
I'll agree. Circle, because it gets a square. I don't know if Robert's internet is working so good. He's kind of looking perplexed, like maybe he's getting only pieces, bits and pieces of this. He sent me a private message, everyone. So while we're still on the actual ending podcast, my shit is super jacked. Finish without me, and that we will do. This has been episode. What are we on? 201 of the Actual Anarchy podcast. We're going to continue on some Kathleen Turner Override, which is available for our Patreon supporters. Go to actualanarchy.com/Patreon. Go to our YouTube and hit subscribe. Hit the bell icon. You can get notifications on when we post new shows. We do post shows on Sunday for Actual Anarchy and on Mondays for The Last Nighters. And someone's been commenting that they've been missing the broadcasts, like the live broadcasts. I mean, it's like pre-recorded, but we premiere them. And so yeah. I'm thinking about doing a scheduled thing. So maybe a specific time on each of those days, so that, you know, people who want to, they can put in their calendars, set it, forget it. And, you know, maybe chime in the chat room sector of the old releases here. So we'll probably be looking into picking a time for that. And until then, we'll see you guys next week on Demolition Man with our buddy Snobby Bobby. And we will go into our Kathleen Turner Overdrive right after these moments, brought to you by actualanarchy.com.
Chipmunks. CHIPMUNK. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot. Doot, doot. Doot, doot, doot.